If you were looking forward to some all-new federally mandated overtime pay come December, well, hold the phone. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In San Francisco, I'm Molly Wood, filling in for Kai Rizdahl. It is Wednesday, November 23rd. Happy Thanksgiving Eve, and thanks for joining us today. Let's begin with new overtime rules that were supposed to go into effect on December 1st. They would have expanded time and a half overtime pay to millions of American workers, but late yesterday, a U.S. District Court judge in Texas blocked the regulations. He said the Obama administration overreached by raising the overtime limit so far. Now, some business groups cheered the ruling. Others had already started laying groundwork for the change. From the Marketplace Bureau at Oregon Public Broadcasting, Mitchell Hartman has more.
Leslie Brock runs a small nonprofit, Donate Life Northwest, in Portland, Oregon, that manages organ donations for the state. She has 9 employees and was ready to reclassify 5 of them and start paying them overtime. But now...
we are thinking that we might actually hold off on making some of those status changes. It does help us save some administrative costs, and it saves the staff who would have been affected having to track all of their hours and make their schedules so that they stay within that 40-hour work week.
Still, it's important to point out, this is a preliminary injunction. It can be appealed. The final decision in the case could uphold the new overtime rules. And those rules could go into effect on short notice, says Leslie Chonka at the national HR firm Mercer. She says even if the clock runs out on any Obama administration appeals, many employers have already made promises of higher pay and better hours to their workers.
For those that have already started communicating, this will be kind of difficult to reel back and tell employees they're not going to be eligible for overtime after all, or that they won't get a salary increase.
And whatever happens with the court case, Chris Owens at the Progressive National Employment Law Project says the overtime rules might be hard to reel back politically.
It actually was going to help middle-class workers get a raise. And I have a hard time imagining that the new president is going to want to take that raise away.
But the businesses and state governments that pushed for the injunction say the new overtime rules should be scrapped because they're too costly. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Now, you would think all eyes would be on turkey this week, get it, because Thanksgiving. But chicken is stealing some headlines. The Georgia DOC is a price index that comes out every week from the Georgia Department of Agriculture, and it helps grocery stores determine what to pay for their chickens. But there are questions about the quality of that pricing. Marketplace's Annie Baxter checks it out.
Georgia's poultry industry brings in tens of billions of dollars a year, and the state's price index for chickens is influential. But some critics are crying foul that the index diverges from others. The Georgia DOC chicken prices have been running higher than in other benchmarks and don't reflect the same trend lines.
The puzzle is the Georgia DOC index shows very little volatility, prices not going up or down very much at all, whereas they fluctuate very substantially in the other price indexes.
Vincent Smith is an ag economist at Montana State University. He says price data from a handful of powerful chicken producers dominate the Georgia DOC index.
And those companies may have a vested interest for competitive or other reasons for not accurately revealing the actual prices that they are paying or are receiving for their product.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture stopped publishing a report based on the Georgia DOC because it couldn't independently verify the data. Georgia officials now want the state's producers to provide more detailed pricing information. Tyson, one of the nation's largest poultry producers, says it's considering the request. Jeffrey Dorfman is an economist at the University of Georgia. He's skeptical the Georgia DOC's problems have forced grocery stores to pay too much for chicken. He says grocery stores are savvier than that.
These are multi-million dollar corporations on both sides.
A class action lawsuit claims several producers conspired to fix prices for broiler meat. I'm Annie Baxter for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, consumer confidence is up in the first big report since the election. The Dow continues to boom. We will have the details when we do the numbers. Kodak and Polaroid are basically the iconic names in the world of photography and their companies with similar trajectories. Each basically pioneered a ubiquitous and popular film technology. Each failed to keep up with the changing camera landscape, filed for bankruptcy, and is hoping to mount a comeback that is rooted partly in the past. Last month, we did a series of stories at the Kodak plant in Rochester, New York. And today, we've got Scott Hardy, the CEO of Polaroid, on the resurgence of instant print cameras that's coming around just in time. Hi, Scott. How are you?
I am well. Good to be back on your show, Molly.
I know. Thanks for coming back. And it seems that the tides are turning in favor of Polaroid. These studies about premium point-and-shoot cameras and instant print cameras up 24% and 148% respectively over the last year. Why do you think these sales have grown so much now, and what does that mean for you?
You know, Polaroid has this history that goes back 80 years. It started in 1943 when Edwin Land made this most significant breakthrough in conceiving the instant camera while on vacation with his family. That then kicked off what has become a history of innovation. And what we have found most recently is that there was a whole new generation of consumers who are buying these instant print cameras and experiencing instant photography for the first time. And these are the Gen Y and the Gen Z generations that are just infatuated with this retro photographic experience that we're able to provide.
So you think it's a little bit of, you know, we've been talking, I feel like, a lot on the show about nostalgia as an economic driver. is it some of that? Is it hipsters coming and saying, you know, we love this style?
Definitely. I think that the hipsters are very much fans of what we do. And even if we look at where we sell a lot of our products, you know, we sell many of our cameras at places like Urban Outfitters, in addition to the normal consumer electronic places like a Best Buy or an Apple store or a Target department store. And so I think there definitely is a hipster movement where they're interested in these things that are retro and cool.
So, Scott, who would you say is Polaroid's competition?
Well, you have competitors out there like Fujifilm who are making instant cameras as well. But it really depends on the category and the territory around the world that we're in, and there's unique competitors around the world. But the case of instant cameras, it definitely would be someone like a Fujifilm, who's also one of our strategic suppliers.
And how closely are you watching GoPro, for example, which has obviously had some pretty high-profile issues recently? And you could argue that the Cube, the Polaroid Cube, is a bit of a competitor in that action camera space.
Yeah, I think that when you look at something like the action camera space, GoPro is obviously a market leader. They've got a lot of challenges that they're dealing with. And you know, our focus is on continuing to bring products to market that address that action sports consumer, that are easy to use, affordable, and really the segments that we feel where the consumer has a lot of interest. And so in many ways, we're addressing, in some cases, a different demographic than who they're focused on. But we still see, you know, tremendous upside. And you know, we're a private company, and so we don't deal with a lot of the challenges that they're dealing with today as a publicly traded entity.
Does it feel like, though, it's an ongoing reminder to maybe diversify beyond just devices, which Polaroid has done, right, in the past with licensing?
Absolutely,
but it's not,
yeah,
not clear sailing just yet, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, diversification is a wonderful principle, whether it's product planning or financial management. You want to have a diverse set of customers, a diverse set of categories that you're competing in. And that's what we've done, is we're in a very diversified position. We're not relying on any single category for all of our future revenue growth. And that really gives us a very healthy position to be in, you know, in the market with strong financial investors who own our company.
What is in the pipeline? I know the 80th anniversary is coming up next year. Anything you want to share with us about that celebration or new products?
Well, the short answer is you ain't seen nothing yet. You know, we've developed a formula, which we think we've had tremendous success with since restructuring the company in 2008. And I think what you're going to see coming in the future from us is we're going to continue to build on that momentum and provide products that are just intuitively Polaroid and that the consumers love and want to use. So we'll chat in January at the Consumer Electronics Show and talk about all the great things we're announcing then.
Scott Hardy is CEO of Polaroid. Scott, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, Molly. Great to be here.
President-elect Donald Trump announced his pick for U.S. Education Secretary today, signaling that school choice could be a top priority for his administration. Betsy DeVos is a major advocate of charter schools and alternative school options. But if confirmed, DeVos will also have to contend with the rising cost of college and student debt. Mike Essel has been thinking a lot about that issue. He's a 1996 graduate of the Cooper Union in New York City, which until a couple of years ago charged no tuition. He's now acting dean of the art school.
My dad was a biker, you know, like everything that comes with that, the Harley Davidson in the garage, the whole deal. And they didn't save any money for school. Like even, let's say I applied for financial aid, the family contribution literally made my parents laugh. I had done well enough in high school that Cooper Union also gave me a grant that covered the room and board. So for me, the first year was entirely free. I don't know if I would have ever had access to the kind of education I had here if I hadn't gotten in. When you mix up a class of everybody who's going for free and they have diverse economic backgrounds and come from diverse places in the United States, there's a citizenship in the class that I've never seen at another school. It was great because we were all there for free, not because I was there for free. When I graduated from Cooper Union, because I had no debt, I was able to start my own graphic design firm right out of school. And we were able to grow that company to a 20-person firm that was billing, you know, between $2 and $3 million a year. To be honest, I'm still shocked and appalled that we're charging tuition. And I think we should, you know, be free or die trying. I have a tattoo of Cooper Union's foundation building on my chest. So every time I brush my teeth in the morning, I'm reminded of what Cooper Union means to me. Receiving a free college education absolutely changed my life and made me want to contribute to society, right? It made me feel like I was indebted to an idea rather than to a bank.
Mike Essel is the acting dean of the Cooper Union School of Art in New York. He's part of a group that sued the college after it started charging tuition in 2014. Under a legal settlement, the college is working on once again offering tuition-free education to all its students. Coming up.
This has become like a therapy. It makes you realize that we are all part of this world.
When virtual reality is way more than just entertainment. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 59 points, 0.3% to close at 19,083. The NASDAQ shed 5 points, 0.1% to finish at 5380. And the S&P 500 added a single point, less than 0.1%, ending at 2204. Today's shoe quiz. What do Sperry Topsiders, Stride Rite Shoes, Hush Puppies, and Keds all have in common? They're all part of Wolverine Worldwide, based appropriately enough in the Wolverine state, Michigan. Wolverine up 0.8%. Need some flow management? Call Badger Meter, based appropriately enough in the Badger state, Wisconsin. Badger Meter up 1.5%. I could keep going, but I have decided not to. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 2.35%. And you are listening to Marketplace.
Coming up this season on Codebreaker.
If we want to survive, we need to change our bodies.
I never in my wildest dreams when I was teaching her how to do this thought that she would actually have to do it.
We are back with a second season and a new question. Can it save us? We're asking this question of a different kind of technology every week. Subscribe now on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen, decode, and decide.
You're listening to Marketplace. I'm Molly Wood. Let's fast forward to Friday, shall we? You will have, I dare say, eaten too much. You'll be on the couch with nothing but time, and you've got 6 hours of Gilmore Girls revival to watch. Yes! All right, you might be binge-watching something else, but here's my point. Historically, Thanksgiving weekend is a time for studios to drop blockbuster movies to huge audiences. But what about streaming? Are we perhaps on the edge of a new paradigm for Black Friday? Binge Friday? Marketplace's Adam Allington investigates.
It's been almost a decade since the Gilmore Girls went off the air, so here's your primer. TV dramedy about a complex relationship between three generations of Gilmore women. The mom, Lorelai, dreams of opening her own bed and breakfast.
Little paint, some pretty curtains, $150,000 of construction, and we're open for business.
Paul Verna is a media analyst with eMarketer.com. He says movie studios have always known Thanksgiving's the perfect time to target a captive audience, so why shouldn't streaming services get in on the action?
I will not be at all surprised if other companies like, you know, Hulu and Amazon start also making programming available on this day and that it does become more of a thing.
In 2013, Thanksgiving weekend set a record as blockbuster releases racked up nearly $300 million in ticket sales, but that was 3 years ago. Now the options available at home are much better.
The quality of the programming and the viewing experience on these streaming services is right up there with the movie theater. You know, people's screens at home are getting bigger, while movie screens get smaller because more and more theaters are cut up into megaplexes.
And it isn't just the theaters. Glenn Hauer, an analyst with Parks Associates, says people aren't heading to stores to purchase their DVDs like they once did.
Whereas spending on subscription services like Netflix and Amazon is one of the few entertainment spending categories that's actually gone up.
But while Hauer says he doesn't doubt Netflix did target Black Friday for Gilmore Girls, increasingly studios are thinking about a global audience, and they don't have a Black Friday in China. I'm Adam Allington for Marketplace.
All right, once you've binged on turkey and television, you'll be ready for the next great American tradition, binge shopping. So for reasons both personal and professional, we wanted to know what the hot gift ideas were, and we called up an actual trend spotter to find out what's worth standing in line for and what is not. Sydney Morgan-Petro is a trend forecaster and retail editor at the analytics firm WGSN. Welcome to the program, Sydney.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
So, Sydney, don't give me any trade secrets, or do if you want to, because I want this job. But without giving too much away, how do you predict a possible trend?
It's a really complicated answer, but I think the easiest way to break it down is we start with a 2-year projection, and we're really looking at things that are bigger than fashion trends. So we're looking at trends in consumer behavior, maybe migration patterns. How are people working and how will that affect their life? And we form these 4 macro trends. We break it down into fashion or package design or interiors. And then the last little bit is sprinkle in some social media and digital influencers and celebrity presence.
Yeah.
And boom.
And voila. Are you seeing any new trends in the market this year or anything that would surprise us?
Yeah. You know what? I just read a stat the other day that really surprised me. And it was regarding young millennials and their attitude towards gift cards. Only 34% would choose a gift card. And it was like over 50% would prefer like a tangible gift.
Mm-hmm. I guess that makes sense. Because do you agree that the millennial generation has shown a preference for less stuff? Like, could that go along with that sort of...
Yeah, materialism is so passe.
I love it. So of those types of trends that you're seeing this year or even last year, are there any that you think will really have staying power, be with us on an ongoing basis? Like, are gift cards totally over?
I think they'll always exist. But people are looking for gifts that they don't have to think too much about, that the other person is still going to feel has a high value to them. So companies like Birchbox and these subscription services really speak to that trend because you have an expert really picking the items for you. And, you know, the person's getting something in the mail, which is great. Everybody loves getting things in the mail. That feels awesome. So I could see that trend increasing. And, you know, as these younger millennials just get older, their preferences are really going to dictate gifting trends.
All right. Well, let's talk about this holiday season quickly and some specifics. Some we'll make a little shopping list. How is tech looking this year? The iPhone 7 is out. That sometimes ends up being a gift for people. Anything you're seeing in that department?
I think tech increasingly is taking some of the market share away from apparel. I think that VR headsets, this is going to be their year. Virtual reality always kind of seemed a little too sci-fi, but the quality has gotten leaps and bounds better. And the price point is really attainable for a lot of these headsets, but also the Internet of Things and this idea of the connected home. So the Amazon Echo and things like that.
What are you seeing for kids? I know that there's always like the kids gift.
So I'm going to put my money on Hatchimals.
Hatchimals, okay. Do they talk as much as Tickle Me Elmo? Because that was not a fun period for some of us parents.
No, I don't believe so. And okay. Honestly, like the main reason why I kind of want to get one for myself is I don't understand how they hatch.
Oh.
So.
Okay.
Because the egg actually, you know, cracks open. I don't really know how it works. So I kind of want to try it.
Okay. All right. A good mystery for children.
Yeah.
Sydney Morgan Petro, thank you so much for coming on. That was fascinating.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
All right, you just heard mention of virtual reality gear being a big trend this holiday season. Let's talk about what else it can do. Marketplace tech host Ben Johnson is here. He just launched season 2 of his podcast, Codebreaker. The podcast looks at the intersection of technology, culture, and life and asks whether technology can save us. As it happens, the topic this week is virtual reality. Hey, Ben, how are you?
Good. How are you, Molly?
I am great. I am excited to do some VR shopping because apparently this is the season, right? It's real. It's really here. Is it a thing?
I think it's a thing. I mean, I'm interested in your thoughts, too. They've been saying for a while that this is going to be the one. This is going to be the virtual reality holiday season. But I think actually it's finally 50, potentially
I think like 50
here.
Years.
Yeah, 50 years. And I think it's finally here, right? So we have all of this hardware that's now available. You've got your Daydream View from Google, Samsung VR, and you also have all this new content. You've got PlayStation video games, which many people think will be the killer app for this. And then also this week you have the NFL launching these football experiences in virtual reality. So I think we're maybe there, close.
I think if I had to guess, I would say PlayStation and that Daydream View, which is surprisingly nice. Like that's the one that I would buy and wear. But speaking of wearing, most people have not tried a virtual reality headset. And that, I mean, 3D glasses were a deal breaker. What happens when people try these things on?
This is something I experienced firsthand when I went to this event here in New York while working on this episode for Codebreaker. It was this performance called the Hubble Cantata. It's a visual and orchestral performance that about 5,000 people actually went to in Brooklyn's Prospect Park.
Wow.
The performance is about space, and everyone who went got a Google Cardboard virtual reality headset. This is like the cheapest version, right? The simple headset made of folded up cardboard. But when everybody actually put these headsets on at the same time and saw this enveloping space footage while listening to a live orchestra and choir, it was, I admit, kind of awesome.
But on Codebreaker, you're asking this question, you know, there's going to be amazing shared experiences. There's going to be great video game experiences. But you're asking this question of whether different technologies can save us. And I know that virtual reality has been used for much more than just entertainment. Can you talk a little bit about how you're going to go a little deeper?
Yeah, absolutely. On this episode, we look at a bunch of different stories that go way beyond entertainment, Molly. Virtual reality being used by lawyers in the courtroom in a landmark case. We also heard this story about this woman who had cancer and wasn't able to leave her house. And her granddaughter used virtual reality to help her be more mobile in some of her final days before she passed away.
This has become like a therapy. It makes you realize that we are all part of this world. I love it.
Aww.
So this is an older person who's using this to move around in a world that's a lot harder for her to move around in. She passed away in 2013, but it was a really powerful story, and it felt like this new technology has the opportunity to do a lot more than just save people from boredom when they want entertainment.
That's Ben Johnson, host of Marketplace Tech and the new podcast, Codebreaker. The show's episode, all about virtual reality, just landed on iTunes and on the website, codebreaker.codes. Ben, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Molly.
This final note before we go, everyone, I'm about to save Thanksgiving for you. Okay, well, to be fair, OK Go is about to save Thanksgiving. That's the band that does those amazingly choreographed music videos like the one on treadmills and the one in zero gravity. Now OK Go has a new video for a new song called The One Moment. Here's a snippet. And that is just the catchy song. The video Picture exploding guitars, water balloons, paint everywhere, and all of the action took 4 seconds in real time, but it's slowed down to a 4-minute video. And it's actually all a brand collaboration with Morton Salt. The message of the song in the video is that every single moment can have a positive impact. It's nice, but none of that is what's going to save Thanksgiving. What's going to save Thanksgiving is you sitting down with your family and watching every OK Go video, plus the making of, and bonding. There. You're welcome. And that's it. We got to go. Today, the Dow rose 59 points, 0.3%. The NASDAQ shed 5 points, 0.1%. And the S&P 500 added a single point, less than 0.1%. Chris Clark, Brad Fisher, Jake Gorski, Bill Lance, Jeff Peters, Daniel Ramirez, Charlton Thorpe, and Ben Tolliday engineer this program for us. I'm Molly Wood. We'll be back here tomorrow. This is APM.